Laura, the stabbing events in Sydney are still reverberating. Tell us about Elon Musk versus the government.
This is really quite interesting, Philip. This is going to prove to be a real test of sort of any government's power over global social media platforms like X, Elon Musk's X, or any of the others. What has happened in the wake of the various attacks in Sydney last week, but particularly the attack on the bishop in his church, which was being live streamed, was that the e-safety commissioner, who's one of the regulators of such things in Australia, instructed both Meta, which runs Facebook and Instagram, and X to take down the footage of the bishop being attacked. Now, Meta did so more or less immediately. X said it was taking it down, but it actually was only doing so voluntarily pending a legal challenge to the federal government's capacity to affect what its users were commenting on globally. Now, there's a couple of problems about that, which go to the question of the fact that the commissioner was saying just take down the footage. You know, people can, you know, brackets, it wasn't acting on commentary at that point, and X was taking that as being about the commentary, and then Elon Musk himself intervened and was talking about the you know, the information commissar and stuff trying to affect the global, you know, right to free speech, and it all got a bit out of control.
But hasn't the e-safety commissioner just been granted a 2-day legal injunction?
Philip, that's right, she has. She was granted that at a very late afternoon, early evening sitting of the federal court today. And so she's done that on the basis that X had not gone, I was just giving a bit of context there, X had not gone sufficiently far in closing down this content, because all it had done was geo-blocked it. It hadn't actually taken it offline, which meant that anybody with a VPN...
I'm sorry, geo-block, I take it means blocking it in an area.
Yeah, so it basically means that you shouldn't be able to see it in some parts of the world, or lots of parts of the world, depending on, you know, what the geo-block is. But, of course, if you've got a VPN, which basically hides where you are in the world when you're looking at things on the internet, you can actually still see it. So the safety commissioner is saying, no, X was instructed to remove this content and they haven't done so. And so they haven't fully implemented the instruction given to them lawfully by me. So, you know, you've got to stop this. Now, apparently X's legal team were arguing in the court that they hadn't actually been able to wake anybody up or get in touch with them, whatever, back in HQ overseas. So they couldn't take instructions on this. But I think it is really interesting because, well, two things are happening. One, the commissioner's going in hard, and she'd given warning that she was going to do this, and there's already quite a lot of friction between X and the commissioner on a number of other issues and sort of legal suits going hither and thither. But the other one is that the politics of this has changed quite considerably, Philip. I mean, the whole e-safety issue has sort of wandered around about whether it was child exploitation or pornography or extremist terrorist threats and all these sorts of things. But I think what's happened in Sydney has really changed the debate from being just one about sort of the right to free speech to people saying, no, actually, this isn't any good. We saw Peter Dutton change the tone of his language on this issue yesterday. The Greens, Senator Hanson Young, came out very hard this afternoon and was, you know, muttering darkly about Elon Musk, saying nasty things about him and saying that he should probably appear before a parliamentary committee. The only standout in all of this is Pauline Hanson, who's basically saying that Peter Dutton's squibbing the defence of people to speak their mind on social media. Now, I think there has been a bit of a point reached here, Philip, where most of the political establishment now thinks that this is all getting pretty wild. There's all sorts of really bad stuff going on all various social platforms, and the politics and the need for social cohesion means that they're all going to have to form some sort of bipartisan view on this.
Now, what will Elon's next move be, do you think?
That's anybody's guess, Philip. I mean, it, as I said, the X response to this wasn't actually in line with what they'd been asked to do, so it did look just a teensy-weensy bit like a stunt, I've got to say, that in my you know, non-E social media, tusky sort of, you know, non-expertise sort of way, it looked a bit stuntish to me.
Okay, but there is that separate issue about removing misinformation. And this is what's, well, it's been a source of disagreement between government and opposition.
Yeah, and that's, and it's much, much more complicated because that's, for example, there's disinformation, and if we use the example of what was going around on social media after the Bondi attacks, disinformation is somebody, shall we say, deliberately putting up stuff which suggested that the attacker was a young Jewish man who happened to live near Bondi but had nothing to do with this. Misinformation is you or I seeing this on social media and then retweeting to our friends and saying, oh, we hear that, you know, this guy is the killer. But dealing with misinformation and monitoring it and all those sorts of things is quite complex about how you manage that, you know, legally when people can just be sort of saying, well, this is what I've heard. But then there's this extra issue of you have to have the social media platforms actually accepting they've got a responsibility to try to monitor this stuff.
And there's currently only a voluntary industry code, is that?
That's right. Right. Yeah. So there's now talk about, you know, more action on legislation in that area as well. And once again, Peter Dutton seems to have sort of, I mean, who was talking about the legislation being proposed by the government last year on this as all being, you know, a terrible attack on freedom of speech. He's softened his language on that and is talking about bipartisan solutions there as well.
Okay, so the opposition weren't the only people who had concerns with the government's misinformation bill. The media also, Laura, including Auntie, because of the concerns it would, well, force journalists to reveal their sources.
Well, I think that's probably a slightly different issue, Philip, within that broader debate. But it just shows you how complicated this issue has become. I mean, if you even just look at the history of the various bits of legislation dealing with all of this in the last two or three years, every time it rears its head, it does have this different focus, whether it's child exploitation, vilification of a particular community, all of these things. It just keeps shifting and changing, and there's now quite a lot of alarm about the really violent sort of content directed at young men, which is incredibly misogynistic, to say the least. About women, and you know, a really alarming concern about what, you know, where that's going to take us if that is not addressed in some way, shape, or form.
Oh dear, it's a Rubik's cube. Now on to other matters, and the budget is fast approaching, and the treasurer has returned from a trip to Washington with some bad news about the global economy.
Yes, and it says quite a lot, Philip, that people are so cynical these days. I mean, I don't know why people are so cynical, but he's come back and basically said he's been to Washington and everybody says everything's pretty terrible, so everybody should lower their expectations of how much revenue might be in the budget to fund various spending measures. This does tend to be a little bit of a annual thing that treasurers do, and so his remarks over the last few days in particular have been regarded with some sort of scepticism by a lot of economists. The IMF hasn't really changed its forecasts for world growth. The treasurer is pointing to slower growth in some parts of the world, including China, to say, look, you know, we're just not going to get that huge commodity-based price surge that we've had in the last couple of years. That's part of a general message of tweaking the language about the budget. the last couple of budgets, obviously, one, they've been trying to get spending under control, and two, they've been very focused on, focused on the fact that inflation was not at all under control. This year, it's been plodding along on the basis that inflation was sort of getting under control and growth was not incredibly strong, but we've now got, as a result of the various tensions around the world, a bit of a prospect of a surge in inflation again and sort of middling growth prospects. And I think that makes it very much harder for the government to actually forge a message about what it's actually trying to achieve in this budget.
Now, Chalmers has said that the budget will put an emphasis on security. Now, this means defence spending. And last week, we had Defence Minister Miles announcing the government will spend an extra $50 billion on defence over the next decade.
Yes, something tells me that's not going to quite get us out of the woods, Philip, even though it sounds like a really big number. Richard Miles is sort of trying to gradually oversee a gradual boost in defence spending to the sorts of levels that equate with the sort of rhetorical and strategic risks we face. Now, a lot of this announcement last week involved a reprioritisation, shall we say, of defence spending, which is often always happening, like, you know, they delay strike fighters and build more trucks or something. It's a technical explanation. So there's a bit of a rescheduling of money and there's an overall increase. But I think by the end of Richard Miles' speech at the National Press Club last week and various media appearances, nobody's absolutely sure that the increase in spending involved or the strategy really addresses the risks that we face between now and 2030, which people say have actually increased rather than decreased, of regional warfare.
Let's go from future wars to a past war. The PM is off to walk the Kokoda Trail with the PM of PNG.
He is, and in fact he's already arrived in Port Moresby and was addressing a dinner tonight, sort of emphasising all of the ties that bind Australia and Papua New Guinea. Now, the Chinese were sort of there yesterday, so that just sort of gives a certain frisson to the Prime Minister's visit, you know, in a situation where Australia has obviously had this very strong traditional relationship with PNG, but the Chinese have been moving in. So I think, the speech that the Prime Minister's given and the walk along a part of the Kokoda track ahead of Anzac, or in lead up to Anzac Day, is just designed to sort of once again say, look, you know, don't give up on us, baby. You know, we're still your best friends.
Laura Tingle, Chief Political Correspondent, 7:30.
Listen to more great stories that take you beyond the headlines. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.